Today's video is going to be a little bit different to my usual videos. It's not going to be about science or my pseudo-scientific ideas. I have a proposal to whomever might be watching this video or listening to the podcast that hopefully if you stick to the end, hopefully you'll go for it and maybe appreciate it. I've mentioned this before in previous videos that one of my sons, my second oldest son, Andrew, got sick with COVID last year in July. And what I thought was going to be a week or 2 weeks long ordeal turned out to be a year and a half ordeal. He started in Corpus Christi, actually just outside of Corpus Christi, a little town called Portland. And I remember it was on a Friday, he calls me and tells me that he's pretty sure he has the virus. And that he's stuck alone in a hotel. He was there on a job with a group of other fellas. And apparently when they realized that he had the virus, they pretty much abandoned him there. So I told him not to worry about it, that I'll be there the next day, the next morning. From Odessa to Corpus Christi is about 7 hours. So then I borrowed a truck from one of my other kids and I drove there. And my plan was to pick him up and drive home. You know, both of us wear a mask. I have the windows open, I guess, and drive the 7 hours home. But he didn't think he could handle a 7-hour trip, so that he was too sick. So I tell him that, okay, that I got a room next to his room in that hotel. And I tell him, if you're... fever gets over 102, if you feel too weak to get up, or if you're having too much of a hard time breathing, then we're just going to call 911. And that's what we ended up doing, but he goes to the hospital, and a few hours later they call me, or he calls me to go pick him up, because they didn't have room for any extra patients. That apparently they were pretty packed with other COVID patients. And I don't remember if that was, I think that would have been Sunday. And it was raining pretty hard. There was a hurricane warning. So I drive them to the hotel and I tell them, you know, we'll try again in the morning. And so we did. And finally they took them in Monday morning, very early Monday morning. And so then I drive home thinking that the following weekend I'm going to go to Corpus Christi and pick him up and take him home to Odessa. But like I said earlier, what I thought was going to be a week or 2 week ordeal ended up being a year and a half ordeal. He continued to get worse and worse, and eventually they called me and they told me that they have to do a trachea, that the mask wasn't enough. And so I tell him to go ahead to do it. And then sometime later, they tell me that they're having to increase the volume to keep his oxygen levels up. And I knew that eventually, you know, the machine might not be enough. So one of my brothers mentioned that his wife's friend had been in the hospital and was put on ECMO. Directly oxygenating the blood. And a few weeks later, she was up and about healthy. And so the next time I speak to the doctor, I tell her that I mentioned the ECMO thing. And she liked the idea. And she tells me that she's going to research, see who in that area can do that. And so it turns out that nobody in that area did that, but in San Antonio they did, in the Brook Army Medical Center Hospital, specialized with ECMO, directly oxygenating the blood. So a day or so later, an ECMO doctor calls me that he's in Corpus Christi going to pick up Andrew. They're going to set him up with a machine, and then they're going to transport him to San Antonio. And he says, hopefully the ECMO machine is going to give his lungs a rest. The ECMO machine is going to do the job of the lungs and heart. And hopefully what they need is rest for a week or so. And then we'll be able to take him off of ECMO and he'll be fine. And so, you know, we had hope. So they had to, they take Andrew from Corpus Christi to San Antonio. And I go to meet him there. I'm hoping that they hadn't let me see him. They didn't let me see him in Corpus Christi. And I was hoping they would let me see him in San Antonio. But unbeknownst to me, Brooke Army Medical Center Hospital is a military hospital and they have security. So I barely made it to the security gate and I was, you know, told that nobody could go in, even if you had patients in there, even if you have relatives in that hospital, you couldn't go in. So anyways, also, so this became months and eventually Andrew's heart started giving way. And they needed to put a tube, the same ECMO machine needed to oxygenate Andrew's heart. So they put a tube through his neck directly to his heart to try to help his heart. Apparently, I don't remember the left side or right side of his heart wasn't getting enough oxygen. And this whole time, he was in a coma. They had him in an induced coma because they were worried that his moving around, he could mess his tubes coming in. He had a tube through his neck, a tube through each side of his chest because his lungs got collapsed. He had tubes through each leg. He had a trachea and he had a feeding tube. And he had IVs all over the place. And so he had been in an induced coma for a few months. And so they tell me that they're going to wake him up, that they think that the coma is not beneficial anymore. And so they do. So they wake him up. But obviously, for obvious reasons, Andrew, when he wakes up, he's scared. He's been... He had no idea he had so many tubes coming out. The last time he was conscious, he just had a trachea or a mask. I don't remember. Well, anyways, though, so he was pretty scared, and so they call me and tell me that they'll let me in to see him, to see if I can calm him down. And so I'm in Odessa, so I tell him, yeah, I'll be there in 5 hours from Odessa to... San Antonio is about 5 hours. And so we drive there, me and my wife, Andrew's stepmom. And they let me see him, and he looked pretty bad off. It was already, it had been a few months, so his nails were overgrown. His hands were dark. His white skin, he's half white. His mother is white. And he was pasty and all over, and he couldn't speak because of the trachea. And so, you know, so I started talking to him. I would tell him that that he needed to go through this to get to his normal life. That he needed to be patient. Not just for himself, but for everybody that wanted him in his life, in their life. And then I mentioned quite a few people, you know. I mentioned his mom, his stepmom, his brothers and sisters, his nieces, his uncles. And I kept telling them, they're all praying for you. Even Ramon, even the atheist, is praying for you. But you're gonna make it through this. I know you're gonna make it through this. And he would hold my hand, and I told him, try to sleep, try to rest. I'm going to be here. You're not going to be alone no more. And he did. He closed his eyes and started, I think, falling asleep. But every so often, he would tighten my hand. My guess is to make sure that I was still there. And so then I talked to the doctors, and they tell me that his kidneys are failing. That if that they think they can get him a lung transplant, but they don't think they can get him a lung and a kidney transplant. So they need to keep his kidneys working to get a lung transplant. And he was constantly getting infections. So they needed to get rid of the infections. And they needed him to stand up, to walk, and to eat on his own. Even though he had all those pipes all over the place. And so it was pretty grim. They were letting me see him every day. And one morning, I walk in through the double doors. And the first room was a patient, a black lady, very young lady, probably Andrew's age, around 30 or so. And then it was Andrew. So I would always see her, and then I would walk into Andrew, and they wouldn't let me walk around. So, you know, patient privacy issues. They had already told me that Andrew's kidneys, for him to have a chance, his kidneys needed to stay working. And so as I'm walking in that morning, I see a dialysis machine in between Andrew's room and that lady's room, who I never saw conscious. She was always sleeping or in a coma and had pretty much the same amount of tubes that Andrew had. But Andrew was awake. And so when I see the dialysis machine for a few seconds there, I start wishing that the dialysis machine is for the lady, that it's not for Andrew. But then obviously I realize what I'm doing and I stop, you know, I start hoping that somebody just left it there, you know, that it wasn't for either the young lady or Andrew. Sometime later, an hour or so later, doctor comes by and tells me that they're going to have to put Andrew on dialysis machine and that they're going to give him a week. If his kidneys don't start working in a week, then they want to talk to Andrew about shutting down the machines that are keeping him alive. And so by then, it wasn't just me and my wife there. It was also Adalito, my wife's youngest son. When we got married, he would have been like about 6 years old. And he's in the spectrum. When his sisters hug him, he just stands there. He doesn't, like, it's almost like he doesn't know how to react. So anyways, so I'm having to tell people over the phone the situation. And I start freaking out. The kid that doesn't like or doesn't understand hugging, when he sees me freaking out, he hugs me. But what I think he might have been doing was holding me down, because I think I might have been shaking. And it helped. He's taller than me, and it was pretty easy for him to hold me down. And he had to do it a few times. So things couldn't be more dire. And there were people all over the U.S. and Mexico praying for Andrew. And me being who I am, I couldn't pray. In fact, I didn't know how to pray. So I got the idea that that I would try to earn a miracle. Actually, we needed like 4 miracles. We needed somehow to get insurance. He didn't have insurance. He needed to his kidneys to start working. He needed to eat. He needed to stand up, and he needed to walk. And then we needed a hospital to take him in, a transplant hospital. So I get the idea that I'm going to earn a miracle. So I start handing out money to the homeless. I start giving $5 bills to the homeless, and eventually I couldn't afford $5, so I started giving $1 bills to the homeless. I would go out looking for them and handing them money. It was almost exactly a year ago. It was just before Christmas, and every time that I wasn't able to see Andrew, me and my wife would drive around handing food out or money out. And then I got the idea. We were having coffee at San Antonio downtown panaderia, and I noticed a homeless man, an elderly homeless man, had multiple layers of clothing, trying to stay warm. And I got the idea to buy jackets and hand them out. And so that's what I did. I remember when I went to that guy and tried to give him a jacket, he wouldn't take it. And he finally said, why do you want to give me a jacket? I mean, it was freezing cold, and he's still asking me why. And so I say, because you remind me of my father. And he did. He had the same wrinkled face and gray hairs. And I tell him, if my father was in your situation, I would wish somebody would help him out, at the very least with a jacket. And so finally he takes the jacket. And I'm not claiming that it worked right. But Andrew's kidneys, pretty much exactly in that week, his kidneys started to work again. He started peeing like a horse. Yeah, he even peed on me. I was holding that jug and he peed on me, which was no big deal. And then he had to work on it quite a bit, but he was able to get up and walk and eat. And when he was still in Corpus Christi, I had signed him up for Social Security disability in the hopes that he would eventually qualify for Medicaid. And it took forever. It took months of me calling all over the place, Social Security, congressmen, senators. And finally, they returned my phone call and told me that he would qualify for Social Security and Medicaid. And so, it took another while, a week or two, and the hospital in Houston here, Houston Methodist, took him in. It took him a week to be able to fit him into a room because apparently they were packed. And then it took him another week to find lungs for him, which was, like I said earlier, a miracle on top of a miracle on top of another miracle. And so Andrew's doing pretty good right now. I'm going to go pick him up in about an hour or so. We're going to go probably to the park walking to get some exercise. But he's doing great. And so I'm here stuck knowing that I still need to work on deserving all those miracles. And so me and my wife were still handing out jackets. But because of all the expenses, we're running very low on funds. And so I got the idea to start a GoFundMe account. The link is in the description. I don't want a lot of money. I want like maybe $20 donations to buy jackets. And I give you my word that all the money will go to buying jackets. And if I have some left over and it starts to get warm again, I'll donate that money to St. Jude's Hospital. But another option would be to not even donate money to me, to just take it upon yourself, buy jackets, and make sure that people that need them get them. And maybe just to do me a little favor, maybe let me know that you're doing that. I guess that's it.